Welcome to the Tiny House Ideas podcast.
Hello and welcome to this episode of the Tiny House Ideas podcast. Today I'm joined by the founder of Tiny Mountain Houses, Lou Pereira. We're going to be talking about his background, how he got into the tiny house business, and he's sort of been able to ride the wave of when it sort of first came into effect, the tiny house movement. He's been sort of building houses for quite a few years now, and we're going to be discussing, again, like I said, Tiny Mountain Houses business. We're going to be talking about the models that he does, the design styles that he works with, and we're also going to talk about a class that he's recently worked on. So basically, design class. There's a design class called Design Your Dream Tiny House with Lou Pereira, where you can learn everything about sort of the good design practices, absolutely everything through to the permits and the regulations. And you can find that at www.godesignclass.com/courses/tiny-house. And you can also get 25% off the course with the code Tiny House Ideas. So it's a really great opportunity to listen to this podcast, to learn more about Lou, to learn more about the tiny mountain houses. And also, if you look to do the course, you can take your first step in making your tiny house dream a reality.
Welcome to the Tiny House Ideas podcast, the show where we talk about how to live a more fulfilling life with less. My name's Harry Alvarez-Garman, and I've got tons of exciting guests lined up for you, including authors, entrepreneurs, and tiny house owners. If you love minimalism, sustainable living, personal development, and everything in between, then you're in the right place. On the show, we'll be talking about how you can do more of what you love, how to turn your passion into a career, and how to live more sustainably.
Hi, Lou Pereira here with Tiny Mountain Houses. A little bit about Tiny Mountain is I started this company along with my sons back in 2014 with the idea of getting into the tiny house market. My background in this, basically my background is factory construction. Having been in the factory building processes most of my adult life, you know, this would seem to me a pretty easy transition. You know, build stuff in factories, buy the materials, you know, process it, get it out, get it done nice, controlled environment. You know, were all things that I knew of. As I got into doing tiny houses, realized this is a lot different. I mean, with the space that you have to work in, the materials that we use, I mean, there's a lot to consider. So anyway, you know, getting into building and designing tiny houses, we started in 2014. And in my opinion, at that point, most of the tiny houses kind of all look the same, like little cedar cabins and red roofs and cedar on the outside, cedar on the inside, little bitty windows, roof lines. It made it really difficult to get up into the lofts.
Yeah.
You know, and I equated climbing into a loft with a lot of these houses is to spelunking, you know, climbing into caves because it was so tight, you know. And yeah, I would chuckle because I'm not a big guy. You get into some of these lofts, I mean, geez, I can't even sit up. I'm going to bonk my head, you know, just turning around. So that isn't really what I see as the answer. And so anyway, I started designing houses the way that I thought that they should be. Large windows, brighter interiors, more contemporary looks, and with the amenities that people would typically want to see in their own home. Not necessarily say it's a tiny house and everything has to be, you know, itty bitty and tiny, and you know, and you got to morph this into that in order to, you know, sit down and eat dinner or sit on your sofa and watch TV. So that's how really I started, you know, having designed a couple of layouts, and we started out going to home shows. And the home shows were home and garden shows at that point, where they were selling hot tubs and, you know, pots and pans and, you know, the Shinzu knives and, you know, all that stuff. And I realized that out of the gate, we had gone into a show, and usually there in the summertime or in the springtime when the weather's good. Holy smokes, the first show we did, there was an hour wait of a line of people. And holy, they want to come and see your tiny house.
Yeah.
This is crazy. This is absolutely crazy. So that kind of was the opening for us. Following that, a handful of TV networks started calling us. They go, holy smokes. Hey, Luke and Tiny Mountain, can we do a Tiny House Hunters? Can we do a tiny house hunting with you guys? And I go, geez, that's good exposure. So,
yeah,
you know, it was fun. But it was mind-boggling, man. It was the phone was going crazy. How do we keep up? There's, you know, so much excitement and enthusiasm about the industry that it motivated us. It really kept things going. You know, the design component, you know, the my head spinning about, hey, we do this, we do that. You know, but the reality is how much time do we have to do it? Is it going to work? And so, you know, having gone through, you know, a lot of those motions, doing the shows, and just the amount of people that wanted to see what we did. And the other part of this too, is that we're building off site. And at this point, I live out in the country. My showroom was my driveway with a tiny house in the driveway. And I have another little driveway, you know, down below my house. And so that was my showroom, two tiny houses out there with a set of creaky wooden steps, you know, and people would come out and see the tiny houses area with it. You know what? We probably need to get a little more professional with what we're doing here. So it's kind of morphed into, you know, what it's become now with the sales center and, you know, and basically putting this all together. It's been a real cool ride. So, you know, fast forward to now, you know, I've got a sales center and two sales centers. In fact, one's in Oregon. The second is in Washington, where we've got several tiny houses on display at all times. And we're shipping houses. And, you know, originally I thought that, you know, our shipments were going to be just regional. It's not regional. I mean, we're sending tiny houses to all 50 states. We're shipping to Hawaii about every month. Is we're shipping a tiny house to Hawaii. You know, we've done a fair shake of tiny houses that are going into areas that I never thought we would be shipping to, i.e. Alaska. I mean, we built one going into an environment where there is 150 mile an hour winds.
Wow.
And Alaska's not a warm place, man. It's bitter cold. So this went to a fishing village where it's super cold, super windy. So it's like figuring out, you know, what it is we need to do in that specific tiny house for that specific build and that customer that's going to meet their needs, that make sure that tiny house is going to be able to withstand the environment and be able to last and then again meet their needs. So you know, a lot of these are really, you know, thought-provoking. You know, we've got to do some research because the last thing, like I said before, is I don't want any surprises. Want to make sure that the customers are happy and get exactly what they want, or at least close to it. And if it's not exactly what they want, they're going to know what it is prior to us delivering or completing their tiny house. And so, you know, it's been a really cool ride, you know, and it's not stopping. You know, I think that, you know, now, you know, I love the design aspect of it. I love coming up with it. I mean, I'm the kind of guy, I'm kind of wiry, you know, I'm kind of high strung. I'm always thinking about, how can we make it better? You know, what component, what thing can we add? You know, and my latest is ladders and staircases. I designed a sweeping ladder that's spirals.
Okay.
Right now I'm designing a sweeping staircase that also spirals. And this stuff doesn't happen overnight. I mean, it's, you know, it starts as a thought, you know, then it's on paper and then conversations, fabrication, that's not right. You know, and we do it again and again until.
Yeah. Constant process.
So, you know, it's a process. It's all a process, but I like it. And I think that, you know, a lot of the stuff that we do, you know, our customers like it too. I
mean, which is important.
Sharing it. They're excited about it. And once again, I mean, there's a lot of builders, you know, in this space, at least in the U.S., you know, and all of us do something a little bit different, you know, and I like to think that there's a common respect with all of us because I'm not copying anybody else's work. You know, and as far as I know, you know, I'm not seeing it anyway. People aren't copying my work.
Yeah.
I'm sure it happens. But again, I guess that's a compliment. So, I mean, that's kind of it. So we're probably busier. I know we're busier. We were busier last year than we were the year prior to it. And it looks like this year is going to be even busier.
Amazing.
I thought COVID was going to kick our butt. And initially we did a show in Los Angeles in February. of last year. 15,000 people came to, and it was a tiny house only show. So, you know, I talked about going to the home and garden shows. We're done with those, because now there are promoters that are doing just tiny house shows. So there's only tiny houses there. I mean, yeah, there's other things that are being sold, but usually they kind of connect with the tiny house industry. So, you know, so now you've got people that are coming to these shows that are either tiny house enthusiasts, you know, they want to build their own, so they're DIYers. And then you've got people that want to buy a tiny house, you know, they're interested in what's out there. So it's a good place to come and assemble and for people to see, you know, the variety of tiny houses out there and the different things, kind of figured out what, you know, where they want to go and maybe who they want to have build their tiny house, select a builder.
Yeah.
So we did that in February, 15,000 people. It was nuts.
Wow.
The city of LA, had recently changed their zoning to allow tiny houses on wheels, what we build, to be ADUs, auxiliary dwelling units, to be placed in driveways, backyards, side yards with a permit and hook up to the city utilities. So it really was a good avenue for tiny houses. Well, so anyway, you know, after that, you know, COVID hits the following week. You know, we had talked to a lot of people, put together a lot of game plans and talked to a lot of folks about designing their tiny house and building it for them, only to get phone call after phone call, email after email. Sorry, Lou. Sorry, guys. You know, I don't know what's going to happen. My job, you know, I don't know what's going to happen. COVID, I don't know what's going on. You know, everybody is just kind of going through a panic mode, you know, and things changed and everything, the bottom dropped out. I'm going, oh no, what are we going to do? And lo and behold, it took a couple of weeks, maybe three or four, that we started seeing the emails, started getting the phone calls. Okay, hey guys, you know what? We're ready to pursue our dream. You know, we're sitting at home now. I need a back office. I need another house. I need something for my folks to come and stay, someplace for me to escape. And we start seeing the momentum pick back up in a kind of a different direction, because the variety and the need had changed somewhat to offices and to escape spaces. You know, I want to get away from the kids. I want to get away from the wife. I want to get away from the husband. You know, I just need some alone time, you know, whatever they needed, the space words, you know, is what they needed for, but it changed. And so now we're seeing that direction and that momentum increase. And then for us, I don't know if you guys did you have the fire issues that we've seen? You didn't have these huge fires that we saw.
No, but definitely heard about it.
Yeah. So here, I mean, especially around us, I mean, not especially, but around us too, here in Oregon, I mean, cities burned to the ground. They're gone. You know, it's California. I mean, the city burned down.
Horrendous.
So, you know, they're, you know, again, brings in, you know, another need for tiny houses to come in. And we're seeing a lot of the building departments and building codes change because of this need. Because how the heck are we going to get housing for these? There's still people living in tents, still living in campers, you know, and it's cold. You know, what are they going to do? They have nowhere to go. So, you know, so we're seeing that need as well. It's an interesting time for all of us. It's
definitely.
So, I think that tiny houses can solve a need, and it's kind of figuring out what that need is, you know, and then fulfilling it. So it's changing. It is changing. It's interesting. Did I answer your question? I kind of got off on a tangent there.
No, you did. No, you did. It was sort of really, really interesting to hear that. And I first of all wanted to say, well, first of all, just a huge congratulations. Obviously, coming into the market when you guys did must have been such an exciting time, such an amazing time. And like you said, going from the home and garden shows, and as the movement progressed, as you guys sort of became more prominent as well, and tiny houses became sort of so much more popular, must have been, like you say, just such an amazing ride to be able to experience all of that and to get to where you guys are today. I mean, you said you've built over 150 homes now. Yeah.
You know, it's, you know, and when I reflect back, I mean, having gone through it, as we're going through it, it's, oh my God, oh no, hey, we got another show, we got people coming in. I mean, and oh, I got to design something else. And I got this idea, and I go, when do I have find time to do this?
Yeah.
And to look back at it and say, whoa, what a rush. What a rush. And then to stop and look at where we are right now, is we're still moving. We're still changing. It's, you know, I don't think we're ever going to just be okay with where it is. I don't think so. You know, I got a whole bunch of models, you know, and I think that that's good in one respect. But the reality is, you know, with the 20 some odd models that we have, there are really common, you know, four or five that we build a lot of, that people gravitate to the most. And then we make tweaks to those particular models, which was interesting to me because I thought, well, hey, I thought it'd be spread across, but it's not. It's like, okay, you find a formula that kind of works or a layout that kind of works for a lot of people. And then I like it. Here's what I want to do. So that works. That works pretty well. We're not a builder that comes and does full customs. So a lot of times, folks will call us and say, hey, I drew this up and can you build it? So no, that's not us. It's too much work, rework, and figuring things out when we've already got things figured out with the models, with the core models that we have. So that was, initially it's like, boy, we gotta do everything we can get because we need to survive. To now it's like, hey guys, how about you take a look at this? Maybe this can work for you. And sometimes it's not a fit. You know, it's like they want what they want. People, have a specific idea and that's what they want. And I gotta tell you, along that same thought is that there is so much, and you see it all the time, and so does everybody else that's interested in tiny houses, information on the web, on TV, about building these tiny houses that are I don't know how tall, with decks on the roof and porches that fold out and windows that fly open and garage doors that you can drive your car through and out the other side of the tiny house. It's mind-boggling. And every time there's something new that comes out, I mean, the media is on it. Boom, check this out, guys. And we get a rash of inquiries saying, hey, can you do those double garage doors that I can, fly my drone through my, front door out the back, or, drive my motorcycle up and over and, jump through my tiny house. Think about, and so you look at some of this stuff, you say, it looks really cool. When reality hits, we're building a tiny house that needs to go down the road. And that tiny house needs to be structurally sound and stay solid, as it transports. In a lot of cases, that's not going to work. You're not going to have the longevity of that structure. If you've got these huge openings in there and it's going down the road, it's a lot of things. And I think sometimes I burst people's bubble when, oh man, this is really cool. This is what I want. Let's think about this guy.
Take a step back.
How are you going to live in this house? Think about that big old door. Every time you open it, you got to move everything out of the way. So it's in, and then you have wheel wells. At least the way we build here is I'm limited to 13 and a half feet in height from the road. So from the bottom of the tires to the peak of the roof. Otherwise, you've got to get a permit to transport it, and you can't haul it just any old place you want to. So you've got some limitations there. So, there's a lot of things to be aware of in designing and building a tiny house and kind of figuring out how it's going to work for you. So, and I'm not sure how the UK looks at that, the road legalities, the transportation issues, the widths and all those things. I don't know.
But yeah, it's so difficult.
Yeah. We need to be cognizant of, we need to be aware of, and we don't want to mess somebody up. We want to be able to make sure that, if you buy a tiny house, then you can move it, whether it's 5 miles or 500 miles. That it's not going to require special equipment. You're not going to have to replace windows because they all crack because, your tiny house, wasn't structurally sound enough to hold that together.
Sorry, you go.
No, I was just saying, it's just there's when I think about it, there's just so many components that come into play that need to be considered. Whether you're having it built or building it yourself, is the longevity of the structure. I like to say, completely. That our structures should last you 35, 40 years.
Wow.
It should last that long good. If you take care of your tiny house. I mean, that is really, you know, our goal.
That is really good.
I can live that long, Lou, as well. I mean, you can sell it and, you know, pass it on or, you know, do whatever, but you know, you want it to last. You want it to be built.
Exactly. Exactly. That's the thing. And I think that is such an important point, that the fact that you're sort of focusing on the longevity and on the quality and sort of making sure that there are no sort of, there's nothing hidden. You can just drive it straight down the road. Everything sort of comes ready to be worked with. And you mentioned, obviously, you've done over 150 houses, but you've still got those sort of four or five models that a lot of people keep on coming back to. Which are those four or five models, if you don't mind me asking?
There are our Castle Peak 24 and 26 model. There are Mount Bachelor model, which is a 26 foot long. And when I say the footage of the unit, that is the length of the box, not including the hitch. So the hitch also.
Yeah, I'm with you.
And I'm talking in feet, so I probably shouldn't talk in feet to you.
No, honestly, yeah. No. Most people that are listening are from America anyway, so so that makes sense for them.
Okay, all right. So our Grand Teton model is another one. Our Chinook Peak model is another one. But those are pretty much our core units right now. Those are them. And then variations of, you know, we take those models and do bigger bathrooms or bathtubs in them. Or, you know, we can, in most cases, we can take any model I build and extend it or stretch it to 30 feet. And 30 feet is pretty much the limit. As what we call a bumper pool, because of the weight, because you start getting too heavy and you'd have a vehicle to be able to haul that safely. And that's where it gets tricky. Yeah. And I'm not sure. I mean, geez, but you need a pretty big rig to be able to haul a 30-foot tiny house. It's going to weigh 15,000 pounds.
Yeah. That is a thing. And I think that's why it's sort of, I really respect that you guys sort of value the simplicity and making sure things are done the most logical way. And it was like you said, we were talking before we hit record, for the people that are listening, we sort of said how it baffles you that people in tiny houses have sort of so many things that you need to configure to move around to do before you can even sit down and before you can even cook. So I think it's an interesting point that you guys are sort of, so everything has its place and that's its place. Like you're able to use everything, but you don't need to sort of move your kitchen to one side before you can sit down and do some work.
Right. Well, one of the ones that really amazed me was some company, I don't know, it was Australia or somewhere, I don't know, but a company did a loft that would lower down and that loft, what was it? Let's see, how was it? The bedroom was down underneath it. So that would drop down. And then there was a step that you would climb onto the loft. And then that would be your living room or vice versa. And it's like, well, wait a minute. What do you do with the windows? You know, so now got a loft that's in the middle of a window, or do you do two little windows on top of each other? One's the lower window that's going to, I don't know. And I started thinking about that. So I go, that's goofy. And, so, and then the mechanisms to make it come up and down. What happens if somebody gets a finger in there? What happens if it gets stuck or turns cockeyed? I go, gosh darn it, I don't want to have to deal with that service. I don't want to deal with it. So it's kind of freaked me out, you know, to look at some of this stuff and really think about, hey guys, what's going to happen down the road? What's going to happen when that thing doesn't work? And you got this one-off, you know, construction and engineering, although it works good now, longevity. You know, what is that? What's that going to look like?
Yeah.
You know, and it freaks me out. It makes me really nervous to even consider doing some of that stuff, although it looks cool. And every time I say, you know, something comes out on social media, you know, that's way cool and kind of quirky, you know, we get a rash of inquiries saying, can you? And it's like, yeah, I don't think so. Do you really, really want that? Let's talk this through and really think about how you live and what you want. And most of the time it turns out that, you know what, you're right. It's really cool to look at and it's interesting and it's different. And the reality is I don't want that. You know, I want to be able to sit down. I want to be able to lay down, watch TV, do whatever, and not have to deal with all these, you know, contraptions or, you know, go out in the left field, come back to right field, go through the tunnel and come back up. So that's, it's interesting to see it.
Yeah, no, I agree. And like we said, it's got that aspect of being quirky, and it's got the aspect of being sort of interesting and cool for a picture. But then you've got to think on a daily basis, every single time you need to pop to your bed to grab something, every single time you want to go for a nap, every single evening when you want to go to bed, do you really want to be sort of sat there with a remote control sort of waiting for your bed to come down, or just want to hop in bed? It's just about making life simple, really, isn't it?
Right. My battery died. Oh, no. You know, what do we do now? It's interesting. But, you know, I think that, you know, it's the times we live in. And I think you know, there's a lot of, you know, it's I want to get a lot of views. I want to get people to check me out. I want, you know, this is quirky. I mean, even the TV shows, I mean, you know, it seems that they want viewers. And so it's they're not that interested in showing you a tiny house that is perfect for living. That's boring. You know, wait a minute. Everybody got a bedroom. You got a kitchen. You know, there's a range and the refrigerator. You know, they don't really, I don't think that that's the focus for a lot of media. It's it's quirky. It's new. It's interesting. And, you know, let's do something that people can go, whoa, you know, not necessarily go, you know.
What's that? Yeah. No, exactly.
So it's just interesting to see that, you know, and I don't subscribe to it. I don't. And most people that come to me and want to do that.
Yeah, exactly. Just take a step back and have a think. And I think that's it's interesting. It's like you say, we're sort of in different times now where people are sort of interested in how they can do things differently. And I think that's a good sort of transition into the next sort of topic of talking about the times that we're in at the moment. And you mentioned 2020, you had that period where people were sort of very, very hesitant, very reluctant because they were uncertain about their jobs. They were uncertain about what the year was to hold. But then there was sort of a sudden spike again in terms of people who are interested in having the ADUs in LA and California, where that's sort of recently been passed. But how else would you sort of summarize in terms of 2020? Because I think personally, I've sort of found it to be a lot of people who are now realizing that the sort of standard living, like the American dream, I guess, isn't for them. And they're sort of looking at alternative ways. So I can imagine that you guys have obviously seen an increase in demand this year.
Yeah, we have. I mean, I think that, you know, this, the movement has been here for many, many years. You know, and I think that, you know, it was kind of quiet. You know, it really was. It was kind of quiet. It was, you know, it was kind of the, you know, I hate to say it, but it was kind of the green hippie movement way back when. You know, and it was, you know, off grid, you know, get my tiny house and tuck it away, and, you know, solar and water catchment and all those things. To now, it's become a lot more mainstream. And, you know, as it becomes mainstream, or has become, you know, I think that the whole need has changed to where, as I said, you know, to where, you know, what we're building is more along the lines of how people live.
Yes.
Smaller, you know, more along the lines of, you know, give me the stuff that I need on a daily basis, make it comfortable, make it affordable, and give me the flexibility of taking that where I want to and make it so I can afford it. You know, and I think that that's another component of building a tiny house, at least here in the U.S., that's certified. So the banks are familiar with that. The banks and the lenders can look at that and say, okay, I can lend you the money, John, because I know what that is. And of course, you got to have credit and all that. But you got to fill their little boxes in such a way that they're familiar with it. Yeah. So, you know, and that's one of the reasons that we build our tiny houses to the national travel trailer code, and we're certified. And that certification gives that buyer not only a comfort level, but the ability to transport the tiny house down the highway, the ability to get a loan with good interest rates on their tiny house, and provides them with the ability to resale that because it falls and meets those requirements. So, you know, you built value into the unit by doing so. And I think that, you know, that's one of the other things that, you know, the bulk of tiny house construction back when, you know, it was kind of willy nilly. I mean, it was like, here's a tiny house. I found this trailer and I was able to go you know, scrounge up a bunch of 2x4s and some barn siding, and you know, here it is, and I've got curtains for cabinet doors, you know, that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
But it's, you know, there's still some of that going on, but that's not, I don't think that that's mainstay anymore.
Yeah.
I don't think that, you know, anymore. I think it's flexibility is the name of the game. I think, you know, initially we came into this thinking that, you know, all of our tiny houses are going to have an off-grid, have off-grid capabilities. But we soon found out that off-grid capabilities, and especially when it comes to solar, holy smokes, dude. A solar system to power a tiny house with today's appliances gonna cost you as much as a tiny house. You know, so it's like, okay, let's get realistic here. You know, do you really want to be off grid? No, but I might. Like, well, let's take a look at this and, you know, find another way to skin that cat or to solve that issue, which could be, you know, a hybrid system that can work for you, because most people aren't off grid. Most people want the ability to be off, but will they ever really? I don't think so.
Yeah. I'm just going to give a quick mention to Tiny House Ideas. So Tiny House Ideas is my business, is my company. It's been what I've been working on for the last 5 years in the long term, and especially over lockdown, over the last year or so, I've really put some time, energy and effort into building this business. So Tiny House Ideas obviously started with an Instagram page, and it has grown and developed into the business that it is today. It's the perfect free platform for anyone interested in the tiny house movement, in the tiny house community. First of all of the images that I feature on Instagram, you can find out more information. You can get a full fact file over on the website. As well as that, there's a really cool tool called Find Me a Builder, where for free I will personally pair a few tiny house builders with you based on your requirements, and that will save you going through hours and hours of searching through Google results. Take the stress out of it for you, really, and obviously it's no obligation. I'll send you a few recommendations and it's up to you what you do with them. Another section of the website is the approved builders section. So I've been working with a few tiny house builders that I really stand behind, that I see the value in their work. So there's a profile there to sort of tell you more about them, and so you can contact them directly if you've got any jobs that you're interested in. And finally, on the website, there's a section for tiny house vacations. So if you guys are looking to go away and to try the tiny house movement, to try the tiny house living, but don't know if you want to commit to it, if you don't want to live there just yet, then a vacation is a really, really great way to sort of get acclimatized, to learn more about it. And you can do that by clicking on the vacations tab of the Tiny House Ideas website and learning more and searching through some amazing holiday homes. Yeah, that's the thing. I mean, I think a lot of people are sort of attracted to the prospect of being able to sort of be able to travel and go off grid if they need to. But then again, it's sort of, you got to take a step back and think there's two camps, I guess. I mean, there's those sort of people, but I guess they sort of fall more into DIYers as well, I guess, whereas the sort of people that are looking for tiny houses, especially if they're going to be as a sort of secondary unit, then they've already got a grid they can sort of plug into with the main house on the main lot. So yeah, I mean, it's just sort of like we said, it's people changing their mindsets, and as the times sort of change, we have moved from sort of curtains for cupboard doors in DIY projects to obviously the sort of the more luxury, the more bespoke, the more custom fit out stuff.
Yeah, and I think, and that's where we are, at least. I mean, I'm not saying that, you know, we're the answer to all, and I say that all the time. It's just that's our niche. Our niche is a completely tiny house, you know, and most people are going to place them in an RV park, or as an ADU, or be under the radar somewhere where they have the ability to plug it in. You know, and propane is just a barbecue tank. You know, water is a water hose. You know, the biggest issue that folks have is septic. You know, what do you do with the toilet water?
Yeah, with the waste. Yeah,
there is just a variety of toilets in the market. I am a toilet aficionado, I think. You know, I know more about toilets and various waste disposal methods than I ever thought that I would.
Yeah. Yeah, I can imagine. Because obviously you've got sort of, I mean, so many people are sort of deterred and put off by the sort of traditional composting toilet. And that's why they're sort of looking at the incinerating ones and all sorts of different ways. So I can imagine that, I guess it ties in with you guys that the sort of customers you're speaking to aren't really the ones that are sort of interested in composting toilets, I guess.
You know, I tell you what, it's, you know, people want to solve that issue and don't want to have to hook up to city septic, or want the ability, no matter where they go, to not have to deal with that component. And so the best way to do that is with a composting toilet, because it doesn't require, like an incinerating toilet would, you know, electricity in order to, you know, to burn your poo, you know. So there's, you know, there's that yuck factor.
Yeah.
Oh, we got to take it out of there. How you do? You know, but it's interesting.
Yeah, it is. That
the toilets, I mean, the composting toilets are by and far the most common rather than a flush toilet. But I'll tell you what, you know, most of the tiny houses we built are residential flush toilets.
Okay, that's interesting. Actually, yeah, I wouldn't have thought that. So it's interesting to hear that.
Yeah, that's the primary, and then second to that would be the composting toilets, and then you have a dry flush toilet that kind of shrink wraps your waste.
Yeah, puts it into a bag. Yeah,
you know, big string of sausages, and then you have the incinerator toilet. But the incinerator toilet brings up a whole nother issue in that, with the incinerator toilet, we have a limitation in terms of how much electricity can go into the tiny house. We're limited in the States by 50 amps, 220 volts. So you got to do an incinerating toilet that uses just a little bit of electricity. So the downside of that, it takes a long time to burn your waste up.
Yeah.
So you got to kind of figure out what your need is and what you need to do. You know, a lot of times we'll install a flush toilet with the idea at some point down the road that homeowner can take that flush toilet out and plop a, I shouldn't say plop, should I? a composting toilet in its place. And that's what we do a lot. So we just kind of give the ability, you know, once again, flexibility, you know, for the homeowner to change it in the future. So once again, thinking it through, what's going to make sense for you right now?
So amazing. It's sort of interesting to hear about your background and about sort of what sort of brought you to the movement as well, and how you guys have done so well over the last few years. And the next sort of topic I wanted to talk about actually is this tiny house design course that you've been working on. And I've been quite interested to hear some more about that in terms of what the class entails and what people can find out from it as well, if you wouldn't mind sort of talking a bit more about that.
Oh yeah, absolutely. It was fun. I think that, you know, in doing that design class, it really brought to focus for me after doing this all these years. It's like, holy smokes, I didn't know crap walking into this. I mean, I knew enough, but it's the amount of exposure and experience that just doing this and just going through the changes and figuring out how to build the tiny house to the market's needs, to my customers' needs. The knowledge that came into that. I mean, the pieces and parts, the questions, you know, the challenges that we were faced with in figuring this all out. It brought that to mind as Josh and I discussed it. So it was fun. I think that, you know, a lot of times there's a misconception in the tiny house world. If you're a do-it-yourselfer, in terms of what it's going to take to get it done. I mean, you know, it's inevitably, you know, we'll get several phone calls regularly from folks that thought they could build their own tiny house because they saw it, you know, on TV, they saw it online. And sometimes they make it seem really easy. You know, it seems like the regular old, you know, anybody that has basic understanding of tools can get it done. It's not the case. You know, I've just had countless people say, "Hey, Luke, can you finish my tiny house?" I'm sorry, I can't. I can't take on that responsibility. You know, and I think that, you know, there's a lot that goes into it. And I think that, you know, people typically do that because why? Because they want to save money, because they want to build that. I mean, and back when it's like, you can build your own tiny house for $5,000. What's it going to be made out of? You know, is it going to roll down the road or roll off the trailer? so, you know, I think it's coming to a real understanding of what it's really going to take. You know, how's it going to work? You know, can I do this? You know, and I think that, you know, for most people, they can't. Not without, you know, going through and hiring somebody that has the experience, you know, that's in the trades, whether it's siding, window insulation, electrical, roofing. I mean, all these things are major components, putting the siding on, the windows on so they don't leak, you know, making sure you flash them and, you know, and do all the things you need to make that structure watertight. And I think it, yeah, you can find videos. Yeah, you can have instructionals on those, but it's more than that. And I think that it's just it's a misconception, I think, for a lot of folks. And they really see it as being a lot simpler. And I can do that. I can do that.
Yeah.
I nailed together a couple of boards in school, and I used a lathe and whatever it might be. It's not enough. There's a lot that goes into doing it right.
Yes.
Doing it so you have a longevity, doing it so you're comfortable not having to rebuild your tiny house every year.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I think that's, and like you say, I think that's where the difference lies. I mean, there's sort of so many YouTube videos, so many sort of places online where you can find the sort of ideas and the things like that, and the advice, the sort of how to build it for $5,000, how to do that. Then you sort of want to take a step back and realize that if you want to sort of have a house for the future, a house of longevity that sort of is structurally sound, then it's worth sort of investing yes. in the sort of correct materials and the correct processes, making sure you're sort of ticking off all the zoning, all of the permits and things like that. So I guess the course is just like a great one-stop shop to be able to sort of, for people that are looking to DIY, it's sort of come and get all of your wealth of information that I can imagine. Obviously, all of the knowledge that you've accumulated over the last few years, over your life, I mean, but especially sort of in the tiny mountain houses the last few years, sort of be able to neatly package that into something for people to have a look at.
Yeah, it was fun. I mean, it was fun to share that and to look at that and, you know, kind of just reflect on, you know, really what it takes. A lot of times, you know, it's kind of an automatic for me is when I talk to people and kind of think it through, it's like, wait a minute, you know, there's a lot that goes into this. There's a lot that has to be considered. You know, whether you're going to build it yourself or have a builder do it for you, you know, asking the right questions and make sure that the design and the components, you know, are going to meet your needs. And I think that is the key question in all of this. Is it going to meet your needs? Can you do this? And have you really thought it through? You know, and I think that, you know, a lot of times, you know, folks will come to me and say, you know, I want a tiny house. Okay, cool. What are your specific needs? Well, I want this, this, and this. Okay, how many people are going to be staying? Do you have pets? I mean, where will you be placing it? And then when it comes to the end of all that, it's like, well, wait a minute. I didn't consider, you know, my dog needs to go up and down the stairs, or my cat needs to go across between both lofts, or, you know, I do cook more than, you know, this is going to, not enough room for me to prep my food, or, you know, things like that. And it's just walking it through. And I guess it's more along the lines of a realization for that particular homeowner or prospective homeowner, you know, what their specific needs are.
They're different. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Everyone's sort of got their own sort of specifics in terms of their strengths, their weaknesses, what they're looking for in a tiny house as well. So what are the sort of the modules? What are the sort of things that are covered in this course then?
Well, we cover the actual, you know, thinking things through. You know, making sure it's going to work, but make sure that, you know, are you really ready to live in a tiny house?
That's number one. That's number one. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that's really it. I mean, you know, and we've seen the shows where people have, you know, drawn out lines in their backyard and said, okay, well, this is where my sofa is going to go. This is my
TV,
and that kind of stuff to think it through. And then they go through and they box up whatever they can't, what they're not going to have, but what they're going to have. How the heck am I going to live with just that? it's a change. And I think that, you know, so it's kind of a self-realization of, you know, can I do this? Is it really what I want to do? You know, is it going to work for me? You know, and what are those components? So it's realizing that it's taking a look at, you know, the components of my tiny house. You know, how big do I need it to be to live comfortably? You know, and then you've got the flip side of that is, well, wait a minute. How much can I afford? You know, so it's taking a look at all of that and coming up with some decisions that are going to work for that individual. So it's kind of a self-realization, you know, taking a look at layout, what you really need to live.
Yeah.
You know, do you want to be a minimalist? Do you really want to just bring that down to the bare bones and nothing?
Yeah.
Most people really don't. It's like, wait a minute. You know, I can do that for a little while, but not long-term. So let's take it through. You know, I think that in some cases, folks want to, you know, have a tiny house to live in while maybe they build up another structure. and you know they're gonna end up doing it a rental house after that. So it's thinking through, okay, where am I going to maximize my rental potential? You know, with that.
Yes.
So it's realizing all those components. What do you need your tiny house for? You know, what are you going to do with it? What are the long term, short term? You know, and the other part is figuring out where am I going to place it. You know, what are the needs for that particular placement and in terms of utilities? You know, we talked about toilets a little bit. You know, electrical. You know, water. All those things need to be taken into consideration. The design of it. You know, where am I going to sleep? You know, how's it going to lay out? You know, do I want a jetted tub that I'm going to sit in every night and, you know, and lounge and, you know, do whatever you do, you know, or is that just something that would be kind of cool and I'm really only going to use it, you know, once every 6 months.
So yeah.
I think, you know, it's really, you know, figuring out what that is. So, you know, part of the class is just figuring out what you need, you know, is it going to work for you? You know, the components, the affordability of it, you know, are you going to do it yourself? If you're going to do it yourself, you know, where are you going to get the components? You're going to buy from the big box stores. You're limited to what it is they offer off the shelf. Otherwise, you've got to go custom. And cabinets are a big deal. It can be very, very expensive. So, you know, it's figuring those components out. Elbow room, you know, the livability, as I mentioned, and then the cost of those components. I mean, you know, if you want sustainability, I mean, big word, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Not cheap. Yeah. So it's figuring that out. But then in the long term, if you're planning on holding on to your tiny house, I mean, sustainability and longevity are probably big factors.
Yeah, future-proofing it.
Yeah, it is. I mean, so, you know, it's that those components, you know, we talk about, you know, the aesthetics of the tiny house. I mean, there's always that, you know, God, I really like that look.
That draws people in. Yeah.
I mean, I think that, you know, one of the big things that have come up time and time again are curb appeal and aesthetics. It's roof pitch. Oh, well, I really want a really steep roof because I want that cottage look, right? Well, you get the cottage look, but now you go inside your tiny house and you've got to duck down to get up into the lofts. It limits your access to the loft because if you think about that A-frame kind of approach, I mean, you got a ladder going up there and the ladder is over to the side. You're wonking your head. You're turning sideways. You know, the loft space is tight. So, I mean, it really is figuring out what's important to you.
Yeah.
You know, the way I see it is you're probably going to spend more time in your tiny house than outside looking at it. Not that the outside doesn't need to be attractive. So it's just kind of figuring out that for each individual. You know, most people, you know, at least the way that I design our tiny houses, I like big windows. I like light and bright because it's alive to me. You know, dark windows, small spaces, in my opinion, I don't know. I don't particularly care for them. I don't. But if that's your thing, I mean, it's your thing. But I'll tell you, most of the houses I build, big, tall windows, bright, white interiors. I mean, it's just, that's our style.
Exactly. So to make the space feel a lot more open.
Right.
Yeah.
And then, you know, where are you going to park it? You know, zoning codes, you know, are you going to be, you know, under the radar? Are you going to try to sneak that little tiny house in somewhere, but it's not that little. It's 13 and a half feet tall. Oh, I wanted a 30 footer. Holy smokes. Where are you going to hide that? Mom's backyard, the front yard. So, you know, it's just figuring out, you know, and I overuse the term, but it's think it through. You know, think it through. It really is. You know, and you know, I like to say that, you know, to think that we help our customers think it through.
That's good.
Yeah. So there's no surprises.
Yeah.
You know, so as we ask about, you know, the class itself, it covers, you know, the design components, the livability of it, you know, what's good for you, the homeowner, what your long-term, you know, idea is of your tiny house. Placement, utilities, you know, those components. So, you know, I think it's fairly comprehensive in terms of the items we cover. I would encourage you to take a look at it because I think, you know, you're going to take in what you need and leave the rest as you typically would. But I think it covers a lot of ground.
That's good. That's good to hear. Sort of interesting that all of all of the knowledge and all of the things that you sort of mentioned can all be packaged into this sort of easy to digest, I guess, for people that are interested in it. So would you say it's sort of aimed towards more people that are looking to DIY or that are looking to, or is it just sort of completely open to anyone that's sort of interested in tiny houses?
I think it's more general. I think, you know, it does cover the do-it-yourselfers, you know, in terms of if you're thinking about this, think about this stuff, think about the windows, think about where you're going to buy these things, you know, think about your experience level and your capabilities. And then again, it's talking about, you know, the livability of whether it's you're looking for a builder, you know, yeah. What are the materials they're using? You know, how do they do what they do? You know, is there a warranty? You know, is it going to fit my specific need? Can they cater it to do my hookups to for once again, you know, where my placement is going to be? So I think it covers both.
Okay. That's good to hear. Sort of very interesting to hear about. What would you say is, I guess, the main takeaway? What's the sort of main appeal of the course?
You know, I think it's more of an awareness. It's more of an education in terms of the components and what it's going to take to do it. You know, I think that in some cases, folks are walking into this kind of blind, you know, not really thinking it through, just thinking about the end result and spending $5,000 and, you know, having a tiny house that's going to be way, way cool. It's not that easy, guys.
Exactly.
Come into play. Yeah,
definitely. You need to have a good think about that. Definitely.
Yeah, and I think the other thing too is that, you know, a lot of folks, you know, let's say you're living in an apartment. You know, I'm not sure what the cost of an apartment is in your area, but I'm sure it's not cheap.
Exactly, it's not.
No. And so when you start looking at cost, and so say, you know, you are financing your tiny house. I mean, in most cases, you know, even if it's a $50,000 tiny house you're financing, I mean, your payments on $50K can be as little as a couple $300 a month.
You know, if
the right lender and your credit is decent or good. So you start comparing that to what you're paying in rent and look at, well, wait, if I'm paying in rent, I mean, after 5 years, what do you have? Well, I'm moving out. They won't even give me my deposit back. You know, it's like, well, wait a minute. You know, where's my equity? What have I done here?
Yeah.
I mean, all the money has gone to, you know, somebody else. So you start looking at a tiny house and, well, this is mine. You know, I can take it with me. I've got this. This belongs to me. When I leave where I'm at right now, guess what? If I want to take it, I'm taking my tiny house.
It's exactly. So, that's the thing.
There's some value to that. And there's some value to home ownership, and this is mine. This belongs to me.
Definitely. And as we both know, there's so many different benefits of tiny living, of sort of living in this lifestyle. And obviously, it's like you say, you've got the flexibility, you've got the movability, and also the sort of customization, the personalization. What other benefits for the people that are listening would you say are sort of the main benefits of living tiny?
I think, I know I say this a lot. Think it through, guys. You know, the benefits for most folks are going to be, of course, you know, if it's somebody coming out of an apartment, it's like, wait a minute, this is mine. You know, it's costing me less money. You know, I've got the mobility of it. You know, I can go and do pretty much, you know, anywhere I want to within reason. And I think that, you know, if you're looking at somebody that's downsizing, that's coming out of a 3,000 square foot house, you know, is this what I need? You know, Lou, this is what I need. You know, I need a refrigerator. I need to be able to prepare, you know, my meals. I'm vegan, and these are the things, that the space that I need. So, you know, it's different for different people. But I think that, you know, in general, it's fun. I think that, you know, what's cool about what we do is meeting that specific need for that specific individual, you know, and their circumstances. You know, I think the other part of this is that, you know, as you look at what's happening in our world today with in the era of COVID, and you look at what's happening to the elderly in assisted living, where, you know, they're being essentially, you know, secluded from everyone, you know, because you can't see them. And, you know, if they're ill, I mean, that's a lonely place to be.
It is,
you know, we're starting to build tiny houses for for folks that have special needs, for people, you know, my mom and dad, you know, gosh, I don't want to send them to an assisted living facility. Mm. You know, what can you do, Lou? We can build a tiny house. They can meet their needs that you can place next to your house.
Have that sort of sense of being so close.
Yeah. And you can see them and care for them and they can be in your bubble. You know?
Yeah.
So, you know, and I think that there's a lot of value to that. So I know huge I'm going value. Off on another tangent here, but you're talking about the needs, you know, of that tiny house owner or dweller. Mm. You know, and I think it's vast. I really do. I think that there's so many benefits, you know, in terms of that. I mean, other benefits, of course, are, you know, your carbon footprint, you know, what it is you're putting out. You know, and if you look at that component for us, I mean, building a tiny house, you know, you start comparing it, building a tiny house within factory walls, you know, is the waste material generated in a typical tiny house build is about a pound and a half of waste per square foot. Mm. Whereas site built construction is anywhere from 5 to 10 pounds of waste per square foot. So, I mean, just think about that one factor. That's a lot.
Exactly. It is a lot. It really is.
A lot.
Yeah.
You know, and, you know, not considering the carbon footprint. You know? Mm. So, you know, there's so many, you know, these little tangents, I think, that really make a difference.
Definitely there are. And I think it was interesting that you sort of brought up about the whole sort of carbon footprint, the whole sort of ecological side of things as well, with obviously everyone looking to sort of be a bit more conscious of what they're sort of producing in terms of waste and everything. And I think that sort of is a good segue into sort of, like, as we said, the times that we're in at the moment and as we sort of look to future proof and to look towards the future. So I was also going to ask as well, if you wouldn't mind sort of speaking about, I guess, your future plans for Tiny Mountain House and what you guys are sort of looking to over the next few years.
I guess you're going to have to wait and see. You know, I'll tell you, I'm working on some things right now that are going to have to, you know, just unfold as we go forward. But I think that, of course, we're going to continue doing what we're doing now. Of course, we're going to continue
completely.
Providing the units that we have been providing, the quality units, the customer service, and we're going to change with the times, of course. So I see us growing. I see us, you know, basically answering the tiny house movement's needs for the most part and enjoying it. You know, and enjoying the customers and being able to fulfill their dream. I mean, one of the most rewarding moments for us here at Tiny Mountain is that customer walking into their finished house, you know, having their things in there, moving in and saying, wow, this is it. Whether it's standing in their kitchen, you know, cooking their favorite meal, relaxing, you know, on their couch, watching their show, or, you know, just sitting there enjoying the moment.
Exactly.
It's just so rewarding. I mean, to see that, that it makes it worthwhile. It does.
Definitely. Definitely. It's so rewarding. And there are so many, as we said, it's a lifestyle thing as well. I mean, it's people that have shifted their mindset towards this, but they're also sort of looking at exploring different lifestyles in terms of having more time for themselves, I guess, as well, because like you said, the payments are obviously a lot lower. It's sort of a lot easier on your pocket, on your wallet. So people can sort of have more time rather than sort of grinding out in their 9 to 5 and sort of following the hustle culture that I guess has been ingrained into people. They can sort of really take time to sit back, relax, appreciate in their tiny house and think this is where they are, live in the moment and enjoy what they've done.
Yeah. And I think, you know, one of the things that comes up constantly is, you know, what do I really need? You know, where do I spend my time now in this 3,000 square foot house or my apartment? You know, do I need that sitting room? Do I need that big morning room? You know, where do I spend my time? Where do you spend your time? So it's that, when I say it again, that self-reflection, realizing, you know, what it is you need and where you spend most of your time. And it's kind of a waste.
Yeah.
Everything else is kind of a waste.
Exactly. Sort of about pairing back and realizing what is essential and realizing what people really need on their day-to-day basis and just sort of cutting out everything that is, I guess, mental and physical clutter.
Did I answer your question?
No, you did. Yeah, definitely, definitely. And I mean, there's so many more things that I'd love to sort of pick your brains about and sort of to dive into loads more. But I think we've had a really, really interesting conversation. It's been a pleasure. I appreciate your time speaking to me about sort of your background and sort of hearing your insights. It's inspiring for me, and I'm sure for everyone that's listening as well, can really take some value from everything you've had to say. And of course, to check out the class as well, to sort of get that sort of more personal advice from you. And again, I just wanted to say a best of luck for 2021 and everything that's sort of going to be coming in the next few years. And just a huge thank you.
Harry, thank you very much. I really appreciate the time you spent with me and what you're doing. I wish you the best. You got to check out the design class. I think it'll be enlightening for you. And take care, be well, and thanks.
As always, I hope you enjoyed this episode of the Tiny House Ideas podcast. If you've got any questions, any suggestions, any questions for future episodes, any ideas, then please do get in touch. Instagram's the easiest way to reach me at Tiny House Ideas. If you'd like to support the podcast, as I've mentioned, it's available on Patreon to support, and we've got a private Discord group there where we can have the discussion. We can really break down the podcast, talk about each episode, talk about upcoming episodes, and also watch all of the new releases early.